from early in the period that we're talking about, the Elizabethan period, perhaps the end of that, there was a growing sense that expanding an empire and engaging in long-distance trade, that was something that important European states did. And you get that kind of growing sense, I think, right through the 17th century. Colonization is increasingly part of national prestige. And also, I think, a sense that England's kind of behind other European states in that, in this respect. That's certainly something that you feel in kind of literature and culture more generally at the beginning of the 17th century. But the early Stuarts, James I and Charles I, didn't really have the resources to do empire at scale, as it were. Under James I, he actually seems to be quite ambivalent about colonisation and colonial trade. Under James I, the early attempts to colonise Virginia, Bermuda and New England were pretty chaotic, really, and they lacked strong backing from the state. So many of the first attempts were, in effect, private ventures funded by groups of investors, notably the Virginia Company. The Crown took a share of the profits, but they didn't offer much help in terms of sort of military support. And that's also the case under James's son, Charles I. He tends to sort of delegate power to groups of people, noble men, lords proprietors, that tended to be the kind of the pattern that he'd kind of give power to a lord to set up a colony like Maryland in his reign. So in a way, the Crown's kind of letting other groups and people kind of bear the risk in the first half of the 17th century, because really the Crown's quite poor. It doesn't really have a lot of money. And that's the picture really in the first half of the 17th century. Stuart colonization is all a bit kind of arm's length and not very systematic. But everything, I'd say, changes around the middle of the century, during the kind of period of the Civil War and the Interregnum, after the execution of Charles I, when there's a republic and then a protectorate led by Oliver Cromwell. And these regimes actually give a certain amount of power to people who are much more enthusiastic about colonial settlement and trade, who've been sort of slightly more kind of marginal presences in government before that point. And among the reforms that these people bring in and that the Republic brings in is the Navigation Act. And these effectively turn the Atlantic colonies into a single exclusive trade zone for English traders, which obviously kind of yields tax for the state. And also Cromwell, the Cromwellians, they kind of build a big navy and start sending naval expeditions across the Atlantic to protect the state's interests. So the state's getting much, much more involved in the colonies. Maybe we can say a few things more about that in due course. But when Cromwell dies and the people end up inviting back the later Stuarts, Charles I, then he actually continues a lot of these Republican policies. And cultural attitudes are changing all the time. Long-distance trade is getting kind of more intense and profitable. And England starts to look at the Dutch as their big rival. And so you get some kind of big wars with the Dutch that have an element of that war is about the control of trade. And finally, you could say the later Stuarts as well, they take a much more direct personal interest in promoting colonial trade. And the best example of that is Charles II's brother, James, the future James II. He becomes governor of the Royal Africa Company in the 1660s, which trades in enslaved people from Africa who are taken to the Caribbean colonies and South America and North America.